You're listening to the Hammershed Podcast. Welcome to the Hammershed Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Gottfried. On today's episode, we are joined by Jonathan Marcus. Jonathan is the head coach of High Performance West, a Portland-based training group of elite-level distance runners. Jonathan is also the head cross-country coach at Clackamas Community College and co-host of the Magnus and Marcus Podcast. Before we get into the show, I want to thank our listeners for all the great feedback and support. The best way you can help the show out is to leave us a review on iTunes. To make things easy, I'll leave instructions on how to do that in the show notes. Welcome to the show, Jonathan. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. So before we get into what you're doing with High Performance West, let's talk about your background in track, cross-country, and coaching.
Yeah. You know, I think I'm one of those athletes turned coach, as many coaches are. In my case, I really wasn't that good. I wouldn't say I was that good. I mean, I was competitive at my conference and state meet at high school level, and then kind of more conference and really competitive in college. And I thought I was going to go Olympic trials and thought I was going to be a big shot and shock the world when I graduated school. And, you know, just marginal talent who was solid enough to be competitive around a lot of local races, but never able to really make that step from, you know, local competitiveness to national class competitiveness. And, you know, one thing I came upon quickly was that I wasn't that good. So, but I love the sport and I love track and I love running and I love people. And I figured coaching would be the next best step and next best way to stay involved for many years to come and have a little bit longer legacy than another guy trying to run sub 14 for a 5K.
Sure.
So once I had a sobering reality, I just said, I'm going in coaching and just been coaching pretty much, you know, ever since I graduated college and started off at my high school and my alma mater at Franklin in Southeast Portland here in Oregon. And then just kind of went from it to an NAI school for a couple of years, Warren Pacific, then assistant at University of Portland. So got to see a really good distance focused Division I program that Rob Connors built over many decades, you know, flowing and going, and had an opportunity to be the distance coach at Portland State University, just down the river and stay in Portland, not have to move, which my wife loved. So, spent a couple of years there, like building a program, a distance program from scratch. I think we had like three guys on the team who could, you know, were 940, 3K guys. And, you know, we got to a healthy place once I left the summer. And, you know, one thing just led to another. And I had opportunity to work with a lot of high performance post-collegiate athletes all of a sudden. You know, that's the thing about life. Everything's temporary. And so you got to jump at the opportunities when they present themselves. And here I am.
Yeah. So why don't you describe to us what High Performance West is and how it came to be?
I mean, it's a track club, but not a track club. You know, it's I like to think of it more as a community.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I co-founded it with my friend and coaching colleague, Chad Caldwell, who currently is at University of Portland as the assistant coach in charge of all things speed power over there. So basically anything not 800 meters and up, although he does coach some 800 meter and down type individuals, as well as sprints, hurdles, jumps, etc. And we just saw a need really in the Portland community for a truly developmental club for kind of that developing national class or even developing world class athlete who wasn't going to go pro right away, be signed by a major shoe company contract and go with one of those training enclaves. Like, you know, I always tell people this is the middle class. Like club, like we're the middle class people who are trying to make it, you know, trying to live the American dream, you know, trying to vie for, you know, spots in the finals at U.S. championship meets, be competitive at U.S. championship meets and finals, and, you know, maybe squeak a couple highly developed, highly motivated, highly talented athletes onto, you know, Olympic or world teams. And then eventually, you know, we want to grow it to be a complete club where we have throwers and jumpers and many sprinters, but right now we just kind of start with what we're good at and what we had immediate access to. So I just, you know, ran with the distance running side of things. And we grew from two athletes in July to we just added our newest member, Eleanor Fulton from University of Washington, a four-time All-American in the mile for UW indoors and DMR, distance medley relay, to 25, I think, middle distance athletes and two going on three sprint athletes. So, you know, I thought I'd be happy if we were here in 4 years, let alone 8 months. So
yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's an organic thing. I mean, and the main thing is about the athletes. It's an athlete-centered club, so it's always about the athletes first. And really, it's just they told a friend who told a friend who told a friend, and through the athlete grapevine, these people just showed up. And you know, we're much more about people than having a certain process of that scientific and like do X and Z will transfer, because you're working with highly motivated, highly talented athletes. So it's kind of how I was telling my buddy Steve Magnus, who we do that podcast with, when you coach that caliber of athlete, it's more about knowing what not to do and why and when not to do it versus doing too much and overloading them and, you know, having them be flat or injured or, you know, a little bit depressed physiologically or even emotionally by having them do too much things, too much busy work.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes as coaches, we tend to be like, man, there's just so much we could do to have so much stimulus on so many different energy systems. This, you know, it's like kid in a candy store. It's like, yeah, we'll do the central nervous system work, anaerobic work, metabolic work, lactate dynamic work. Oh my God, this is going to be great. And then it's like, we realize these people only have so much bandwidth, even though they're really good and highly talented. They're just like any athlete you work with at any skill level. They only have so many hours that they can put in before they start to give diminished returns. And so really I at this level prescribe and do less than I thought I'd be doing, but know exactly why we're doing it less and do than you do at the collegiate or scholastic level, where you have to teach what the sport is and teach techniques, teach the skill, teach discipline, teach repetition, teach all these things that those kids need before they can, you know, graduate to this type of competitive sphere.
Sure. It's got to be a completely different atmosphere, being you're not teaching the basics and you're not having to do a lot of that motivation stuff. It frees up a lot of bandwidth to focus on other things.
Yeah, it's different, you know, different priorities, right? And really, it's high performance is so much more about the mental, emotional engagement than it is about the physical. Because here, post-collegially, you know, there really is no middle class right now in post-collegiate track, right? It's either the haves or have-nots.
Right.
So most of these people are investing not only their time, but also their money into themselves. And I always tell people, you're just like a startup. You have to invest in yourself. If you don't invest in yourself, well, you think you're going to have some magic, donor that's just going to give you thousands of dollars. I mean, yeah, it's nice to have that, you know, if you have that sponsor opportunity, but you know, I think there's more skin in the game when you frame it like that, and then people are even more motivated to do well. And then it's understanding that, you know, there's opportunities presented, but there's never any handouts given. And it doesn't matter who you are, because there's such a small pie to money or professional capital to compete for. You have to be really like a hawk in those opportunities and maximize your competitiveness and your placing when you're afforded that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's less the nice and warm, cuddle, fuzzy, hey, let's develop, let's progress. Oh man, you got 2 seconds faster this race than the last one. That's awesome. Oh, you're going to get every 1500 meter, you're going to get 2 seconds faster. And bam, you're going to pop the big one off. So you don't see that kind of linear progression. It's more about infusing them with the skill set to be competitive in a variety of different circumstances, whether it's a honestly paced time trial type race that has a prize purse if you go under sub, you know, whatever mark, or if it's a national championship where you have to do rounds and, you know, advance to finals that then puts yourself in a strategic position to make a global team and know, and you have to just, you know, do your homework as a coach and even as an athlete a lot more thoroughly. Like you have to know people's tendencies, know their, you know, skill set, know what they're talented at, know what their weaknesses is. And then the fun part, create a strategy where you can try to maximize or optimize that athlete's capabilities in that environment against that specific field. So, you know, it's just, it's different. It's fun. It's still coaching. And, you know, it's not what I necessarily like what came up in, but I was really fortunate to have some very good high performance coach mentors with Jerry Schumacher, who leads the Bowerman Track Club. Even I had Calibro Salazar, head coach of the Oregon Project, as a mentor in a lot of ways. Because those guys, when I was 10 years younger, let me come to practice, their practices, watch these world-class athletes work out, see what they're doing on the practice track, and also be privy to the conversations and dialogues they were having with their athletes about how the athlete was feeling that day, you know, the upcoming race, even, you know, reconvening and engaging in conversation about a previous race. So, you know, they taught me a lot. And I mean, Rob Connor over at University of Portland is a genius in terms of relating to people. He gets the most out of distance runners I've ever seen. I mean, he gets every ounce out of people who buy in and who want to be a Portland pilot. It's incredible. You know, I took it for granted being in that culture, and then having leading and, you know, been the head developer of my own, like, kind of distance programs here at Clackamas, and then being a part of a bigger culture at Portland State as an assistant. You know, it was just really, really tough. And I didn't realize what Rob had created in terms of a culture aspect. And so that's, you know, getting back originally to High Performance West, what it is, it's more of this culture, this community, and we're creating this atmosphere. Because the X's and O's is easy, but it's, the difficult thing is creating that environment where the athletes feel safe, supported, secure, challenged, but also capable of achieving. And that's a day-to-day, you know, thing you have to polish every day. If you don't, you know, you're really not going to be successful. And that, unfortunately, sometimes a lot of post-collegiate coaching in the distance world is write a workout plan, email it, or, you know, meet at the track once a week, check in for the workout. Okay, go do all your runs and everything else on your own. And your quote-unquote coach will only see you once a week, maybe at the meet, maybe even not. And you have very limited communication. I'm a eyes and ears type coach. Like, I need to be there, not necessarily as a control freak, but just to know how the athlete's doing. Like, are you happy? Are you sad? Are you frustrated? Are you pissed off? Are you sick? Are you, you know, where is your energy level? Like, did you get in a fight with your boyfriend? Did you just get proposed to by your boyfriend? Like, all these things impact what we can or can't do. And we can't just say, hey, here's the training sequence of events, of actions that are just arbitrary pick that we think will have an impact if we do it Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You know, we have to know how the athlete's absorbing training in real time. And we have to know how they're responding to stimulus in real time. And sometimes it means you can, you know, crank it and do more work than you thought you could in a week. But a lot of times it means you have to do a lot less than you planned and be okay with that. And know that it's about the body of work instead of one big, important workout that you use to measure or gauge powerlessness or proficiency.
Wow. So we've had a chance to talk to Brittany Henry and Jared Rome. So we've got a lot of perspective on what it's like for emerging post-collegiate throwers. And I'm assuming, and you've touched on this already a little bit, that distance runners run into these problems too with, you know, making it. And but at the same time, paying for their rent and managing work and training. It seems like the U.S. track and field model is a lot different from the rest of the world. What are some of the things that you're dealing with as a coach of these post-collegiate athletes, and what are some of the things you think that we can do on a track and field, United States track and field, to help these athletes develop and make it to the next level?
I really think it's on the coaches, to answer the second part of your question first. It's on the coaches. We need to create environments like we're trying to do with High Performance West, or, you know, like Jared's doing, Rome's doing with this Ironwood, you know, group. Like, you need to create hubs of excellence. You need to create hubs of development. And, you know, I'm fine, like, with the way track and field is, where, you know, the rich get richer and, you know, the poor get poorer. I mean, because it's just like anything else. It's like business. I mean, the really good people, the really successful businessmen and women, the really successful companies understand, you know, what they're really in. Whether it's a distribution industry, information, service industry, what have you. And a lot of times you get what happens. I'm not a fan of the Big Five, Power Five conference schools and culture, because you get all these kids who get everything handed to them, you know, bags of gear, per diem, you know, scholarships, flights, hotels, all that stuff booked. Everything is just taken care of. All they have to essentially do is show up and then just do what their coach asks of them, and they're on easy street. But it kind of, you know, is a fantasy world, because it handcuffs them, and a lot can handcuff them in a lot of ways when they move on to the postseason sphere, because they just think, oh man, the sun shines out my butt because I'm a 206, 800 meter female, you know, distance runner. It's like, those are dime a dozen, man. Like, you know, you want to pay people for high performance, for excellence. You know, that's why you go to a track meet, is to be, you know, see things that are like, whoa, I really can't do that. I mean, I equate a lot of post-collegiate track and field is everyone's a musician. Everyone has to play the small shows. You know, you may be like a Macklemore and playing in front of 8 people, or a Bob Dylan before he was discovered, playing, you know, pubs in, you know, East Village. And if you don't have a really unique or powerful or engaging sound or look or skill or proficiency, then that dream should die. You know, and I always remind people, like, you're either a hobbyist or a professional. A professional gets paid when they do their craft or do whatever their job is. And a hobbyist does it because they love it. And maybe they might make a couple bucks here or there, you know, haphazardly, but they're doing it more out of the joy of it. And there's nothing wrong with being a hobbyist. I know some amazing hobbyists who are great artists and even great coaches. And it's just what they enjoy doing, but they're not trying to make a living at it. So I think it's just really being straightforward and blunt about what this proposition is. I mean, every athlete I take in, you know, I'm always like, look, we're trying to make you a true professional. We're trying to identify races where you can create either more value in your portfolio as an athlete to, you know, elicit and entice sponsors to support you, or you're going to races where they have money available to you. Grand distance, middle distance runners, we have the track, the road, and the grass. So we have 3 different forums essentially year round where we can leverage some type of monetary income. Track athletes themselves are a little bit more pigeonholed. They have indoor and outdoor, and that's it. And sometimes there's not a whole lot of money put up there. But, you know, I'm also like a high performance meet director for a lot of, you know, meets that are middle distance focused. And I just started helping out and making them, or being a part of groups that were like, hey, we want to do this, because like, yes, we need to do this. We need to create the opportunity, which are these meets that have prize money. And then we need to create the development for people to run these, which is then these coaching enclaves or camps or communities like a high performance West. Because if we just bemoan the fact that, oh man, there's not a lot of money in track, that sucks, except for like the really good people. Oh, how can I do it? I need a handout. I need this. I need this. You're creating this like, I need, me, me, I need, need, need. And I want people who are hungry, who understand what the game is, and who are also going to put in 100% behind it. And luckily you don't need to, there's this, you know, fallacy that you need to be eat, sleep, train 24/7. It's like, No. I mean, good training, I don't care what discipline, whether it's throwing or jumping, sprinting, distance running, you should never be working out more than like, you know, 2 to 5 hours, you know, including lift and rest and recovery. I mean, that's a small portion of your day. You have a lot of other time in the day to either, you know, get a part-time job, pursue, you know, professional degree, you know, or what else. This idea that, oh, I'm so privileged to just work out and then just nap and frolic all day in favor and in waiting for the next workout is a total cop out, you know. And I don't like athletes who propagate that mindset. I don't like college coaches who try to tell their athletes that's the only way you can be successful. Like, you can do it if you really want to do it. And I think that's where a space where like actually throwers and distance runners share, because the amount of skill work you have to do in throwing, and the amount of miles you have to put in on the track or road or trail and distance running, it's not glamorous. It's a lot in terms of, you know, maybe other event areas like sprinting. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's all for a unknown payoff. But again, if you employ someone who knows the landscape, who knows what the game really is, then you have a higher likelihood to achieve, because you know which races or meets to go to and which ones not to. I always tell people, like, I'm at the stage in my life, like, dead ends or black holes, I don't even deal with anymore. Like, you don't even get a reply. You don't even get a response. Like, I just don't have any time, whether it's a person or an opportunity or, you know, a job. It's like, if that doesn't lead to what I want to achieve or what I want the athletes or people I work with to achieve, if that doesn't enhance somehow what we're doing, it's just muted because, you know, there's a lot of dead ends out there. And it's like, just don't pursue the dead end. Just keep going down the avenues and the boulevards because that will actually get you somewhere.
Yeah, that's a great advice. A lot of people lose time and energy following those dead ends that you're talking about. So let's talk about it a little bit more, about what you're doing with your group and beyond the running. I know that you're a strength and conditioning coach also. What's the role of strength training for your endurance athletes?
I mean, the role is multifaceted. You know, first and foremost about healthy muscle tissue. It's just, you know, the more muscle tissue you can engage through strength and conditioning work in intelligent fashion, you know, just the more good poundage you have on your body that can do something. You know, running is a very repetitious, very not a full range of motion activity, right? So it's like we're just going straight forward, one foot over the other, turn left on the track. So you don't typically get all the engagement, and you see lots of runners a lot of times with really bad motor patterns or really awkward firing patterns or inactive glutes or posterior chains, this and that.
Yeah.
And it's really, really common. And it's like they go to PT and like, oh, I got some clamshells to do to activate my glute, which is good and okay, but very incomplete. You know, it's like,
yeah.
You're an athlete, not someone coming back from, you know, a knee replacement or hip replacement surgery. You need to be that cautious. So, you know, in distance running culture, we're very much stuck in metabolism mode. You know, a lot of literature and coaching education is focused on metabolism. And now, you know, especially the aerobic metabolism, now there's a little bit more seeping in about different energy systems. So anaerobic, ATP, you know, lactate dynamics, acidosis. There's a little bit more coming in, but that's really kind of higher level stuff that only those really seeking it out are going to be exposed to. So most people just think run miles and run workouts at certain paces. And as you get fitter, your heart rate comes down or you're able to run workout paces faster, and that's how you get better at distance running. So it's, to me, it's lazy coaching because I'm always trying to figure out where is the intersection of high performance, and the intersection is in a holistic body of work with no or very little holes. So if you don't do a whole lot of strength conditioning work, I mean, you're just setting yourself up for failure because it's a big gaping hole. I mean, look at any other sport: football, basketball, baseball, soccer, golf, tennis, you name the sport, they all do some type of strength conditioning that is just a prerequisite, you know, just assumed, yeah, we're going to be in the gym, you know, 2 to 6 times a week. And yet distance runners are like, oh, no, we're special. We don't need that. It's like, no, we definitely need that in a lot of ways. So, you know, that's primarily why it works. And then as people lift, it's hard, but it also gets to be fun because most collegiate distance runners, you know, that I inherit don't do a lot of lifting. It's just they do these static planks or crunches or core circuits. And like, oh, yeah, it's going to get me strong. And like, yeah, I mean, you're giggling because I'm always like, well, think about it. Everyone does it. And the rate of injury for running, distance running, has not gone down. So everyone's doing this core stuff. And yet we're all doing it. And yet the rate of injury has plateaued or slightly increased. You know, it's like, it's not effective. But I think it's just that it falls under that do work for the sake of being busy. Like, oh, I got to make these kids do something extra besides run. This seems hard, and I'll have them do it. And it's like, well, there's a lot of things that are hard out there, but you don't need to just do things that are hard. And you have to have a way it fits in the greater scheme about what you're trying to do and develop an athlete. So, you know, there's that component. Then there's energy system complement, which is really important too. So having different type of lifting recipes or types of actual lifts that complement what we did on the track. So if someone did, you know, and depending on what phase they're in. So if they did a really highly, you know, central nervous system focused, you know, threshold type workout that really fried their CNS, well, they're not going to come in the lift in the gym and do these plyos. You know, it's like not the right time. Or if they did do something that's a little bit longer and stronger, or they're in a more meat and potatoes, as I call it, phase, more like foundational preparation phase, and they're not doing a whole lot of fast, poppy stuff on the track, that's a good time to then incorporate plyos or something a little bit more ballistic, a little bit more CNS in nature into their greater training week. So it's also complementing to overall globally enhance all their energy systems in an intelligent fashion. And, you know, for us, it's like 20% of our, to 15% of our training is that. Granted, our heavy hitters, our main courses is still running a lot and doing workouts at good speeds, but because we can do more volume and reps and at faster intensities, allows us to get better. And what allows us to do that is having healthy tissues that are strong and firing in the right motor patterns. So you put someone with like some med ball stuff, like throwing med balls hard against the wall, or like, you know, throwing it down from, you know, on the tippy toes, you know, hard med ball slam down to a squat or squat and then tossing the med ball in the air. There's no way their chain can't fire in the right sequence, because you just have to coordinate it to do that, right? So the idea is then to sync up that coordination with those types of things and get people, distance runners especially, have a rep for being uncoordinated, much more enhanced. And what we've seen with everyone who's kind of really invested in that is injury rates for our group has plummeted. I mean, it's really unheard of to have a group of 25 and maybe one or two people banged up in that large sample set of distance runners. Stress fractures are pretty much, you know, don't exist with it. You know, because it makes sense, right? You're loading with all this weight and you're loading here, and, you know, that's forcing the bone to be like, hey, I'm under stress, I'm under load, so the bone's going to get, you know, a lot stronger, and you're not going to get all the overused quote-unquote injuries that most people are privy to. So everyone comes into their group and like, oh man, I only can do these many miles, or I can't do hills, or I can't do this because, you know, my calf is this, my hammy does that, and they have all these restrictions. But then once we get them on a good steady diet of just strength conditioning that works for them for like a month to 2 months, all of a sudden they're invincible and they can do things they can never do, run speeds they can never run, recover from those runs quickly because, again, right, you get the hormonal release that it, you know, has a positive impact if you strategize and implement the right types of lifts after or before workouts. So, you know, it's just very sophisticated work. When you look at it, it's all the basic stuff. It's right. Just push-ups, squats, bench press, med ball stuff, you know, walking lunges, forwards and backwards, lateral. I mean, you come in and you watch whatever you do and you're like, this just looks like basic stuff. Well, it is basic, and it's basic for a reason, because it works. And I'm a big believer in, you know, the fundamentals and basic movement patterns. And if you just train the basic movement patterns and you treat them with some type of load, that's strength and conditioning. That's weightlifting. And that's all we're doing, is just trying to train basic movement patterns, you know, in the face of gravity under load. There's nothing tricky or fancy what we do. Like, we don't step on Bosu balls and do all this, like, funny single leg balancing on a Bosu ball with touching your nose while holding a kettlebell. You know, we don't, it's not CrossFit. And I think sometimes there's this tendency to get super cute and super sophisticated far before an athlete's ready, because, you know, we want to see a quote unquote progression, or we want to see a, you know, differentiation or some variety to what we're doing, but it's too spicy at the end of the day.
Yeah,
it's too much.
No, it's funny. I cringe so many times when I see distance runners walking in, you know, and they'll have their track workout, and then their quote weight room workout is, like you said, they lay down and they look at their wristwatch and see how long they can do their planks, and they might do some real light dumbbell stuff, you know, for their arms at high reps. And I look at them and I'm like, no, you need to be doing heavy stuff. You need to be doing squats and cleans occasionally, and at low, you know, low reps, high weight. And they just look at you like deer in headlights, like you're smoking crack or something. And
yeah.
They're like, well, I'm going to get bulky. I'm like, no, you're not. You're running, you know, 50 plus miles a week. There's no way you're going to get huge doing this. But what you do need to do is, like you said, you're going to get that hormonal response and, you know, get the testosterone going. And these are all great things for distance runners and, you know, bone density work and fixing those imbalances with the glutes and the posterior chain. And I really wish that I could see more coaches like you incorporate strength training into endurance athletes.
Well, it's just, you know, it's one, that's the thing about being quote unquote original, right? You have to be moderate in your approach. You can't be too extreme because it's not familiar. And really in distance running, it's a cultural thing. It's just a cultural gap. There just has not been a lot of education or coaches education or endurance education on this. So you can't point to a study or even point to a lot of professionals where this is an explicit part of their training that have had, you know, success at a highest level, because it's all top-down effect, right? So We get, you know, the best distance runners can say, hey, look, we're really good and we do this, and this is part of why we're really good is because we do this. Everyone will be like, oh, we better get our JV athletes to do this too, or we better get our group people, you know, our more talented or more competitive people on our team at the high school or college level to do this too. So, you know, we're just kind of like we're waiting a couple of years, you know, hopefully the athletes have good results and they compete at a high level and, you know, they compete at a world-class level. And then we can point to like, hey, how this group in Portland that started on, you know, a shoestring budget, all of a sudden have these heavy hitters or people who blossomed out of nowhere. And we can then point to because of a variety of other things, but also our strength conditioning practices. And then people will be curious and then they'll want to learn. And that's why it's like I want to do, you know, Steve and I started the podcast that we have or coming on this podcast. So I'm always up to spread the gospel because the more I can get out there, the more people can get out there and hear it and surmise it, the more that it will become familiar and then they'll be willing to take the chance. Because right now you're right. Most people think you pick up a weight, automatically your muscle is just going to inflate and then you have all this extra muscle on you. And you hear from coaches all the time, like, no, I don't want to lift it. And they'll just have all this extra muscle and they'll be all bulky and then they'll be slow. Because in distance running, there's a key correlation that's out there and it's kind of a myth that the less you weigh, the faster you automatically run. And that's what, you know, spawns a lot of eating disorders, especially amongst distance runners as well. It's just not eating anything and not getting any nutrients and not getting any replenishment. And then I'll get thin and then I'll run real fast. Instead of realizing being, you know, and I don't want to say thin, but being like racing fit or like, you know, boxing fit or championship fit or being fit or cut like that is a result of putting in the body of work. Especially like a lot of the women I work with too, who come here and we start lifting them, and because, you know, people are still a little bit sexist and are afraid to lift, you know, put women in the gym because they think it's, you know, whatever. I don't know why. But these ladies start lifting and all of a sudden, boom, they get a little bit more defined, but then their running takes off. They feel really good. You know, there's a better, like cortisol goes down. There's a little bit more testosterone in their system. So they recover from these workouts. And the asinine thing is like we have these workouts designed on the track for women that are men's workouts that, you know, work with men who have a really high testosterone engagement, but necessarily don't transfer as well with women because, you know, they don't have as much testosterone, so they can't really do that type of intense work and get an immediate boost. But if you do lift them a little bit, you're going to get a little bit of that more of that hormone in your system that's going to be a better catalyzing recovery agent. So, you know, someone made the comment a couple of weeks ago, like, man, every woman in your group who's been there is like just really cut. And it's like, well, that's because we lift them. But all the guys are cut too. I mean, everyone's cut because we're lifting, and we're lifting 2 to 3 times a week, year round. It doesn't stop. And it's like we go into more maintenance lift mode now in track season. But I always tell people, like, why would we stop lifting? It's like saying, oh, hey, we're going to stop running any easy miles now. It's track season. You need to be fresh. So you're only doing workout days and race days. So you get 4 days off and you don't do anything for 4 days. Like, that's going to completely – you know, create this like super peak and that you only have fitness for 1 week and then you're just going to completely just go and crash and burn and not going to be fast anymore. So it's the same, but it's the same application of lifting. Like, why would we stop lifting? We've been doing it year round. What's wrong with you guys? But people have
because it's just an education thing, I believe, because they don't understand the global value of lifting and then how to manipulate the prescription of reps, sets, and weights in different phases of their periodization model and how it complements the different phases of a periodization model from, you know, on the track or on the trail, that then they just throw it out because it's just, I don't want to deal with it because I don't know how to deal with it. And so my hope is down the road, you know, you and I connect 3, 4, 5 years from now, and distance coaches and endurance coaches will be much better versed in this and can have an intelligent dialogue about it instead of just putting it in the, oh, pick up a weight, you get, you know, bulky, and then you get slow category, which is where we're at right now.
Yeah. I wish it was that easy to get bulky. I mean, I spend a lot of hours in the gym and I'm nowhere near bulky yet. So they don't ever pay attention to all the people lifting weights all week long and they're not getting any bigger, you know, but so why would their distance runners?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you for sharing all this information and your story of High Performance West. It's been a really great talk. I always have 4 closing questions for my guests. And so I'm going to run you through those real quick. The first one is, what's the 2016 professional goal for you?
I guess my professional goal is to be surrounded by happy athletes. I think that's every year. If I always say if an athlete's happy, you know, then they're going to perform very well. I think we undervalue the importance of just general disposition. So, you know, I always tell people, like, look good, you know, feel good, run good. It's pretty simple. So, but if you're around happy people, you know, then it makes practice and meets much more enjoyable, right? So as long as you're going to be around happy athletes, no matter what happens on the track or at the Olympic trials, like, goal achieved. So.
That's awesome. I like that. Be around happy people. So you're not running anymore and you're coaching a bunch of different groups. I'm assuming your fitness goals are a little bit different than they were a few years ago. What's your 2016 fitness goal?
Just to run as much as I can without getting injured. I'm de facto workout mule for our group, and especially for the ladies. Like, even some of the ladies is getting tougher now. Definitely not the guys. So I'm there to run as much as I can run. I mean, I love running. I love it. I you know, don't have any ambitions to train or compete myself, but man, I'll go out the door and run 2-3 hours, you know, if I could. So, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I ran 106 miles in a week, and then I ran a 70 mile week. Like, essentially, it's just to run as much as I can run, stay healthy, keep the waistline trim, you know, be able to lift myself regularly, and just stay mobile. Like, that's my biggest fear, is becoming immobile in old age. Because once you become immobile at 70, 80, 90, right, that's when death is all of a sudden a lot more impending. But the more mobility you have and just being able to move, that's the fountain of youth. So just keep running and run as much as I can run. So luckily I have so many athletes, so there's always someone to run with every single day.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, how about when you get into the gym? What kind of music do you listen to when you exercise?
Me, I'm a... you know, 1980s baby, early 80s. So it's a lot of early 1990s hip hop, you know, or very conscious, like forward thinking, more type hip hop, Gift the Gab, Lupe Fiasco, Talib Kweli, those types of guys. I also like to mix it up too with some, you know, 1980s rock bands like, you know, Guns N' Roses, you know, a little bit of the harder stuff too, like some Megadeth, you know, or Black Sabbath. So I mean, it's a very eclectic thing. I like good music. So if it's a good song or a popular song, or if it's a good album, you know, that's, I just like good things, or like, I like a good game. I don't care what the game is, or, you know, who, what team you want to win. I just want to see a competitive match. So I'm more of a connoisseur of quality. So if something's of high quality and has a good beat, pretty much anything. I mean, you throw classical in there as well. So country is the only thing that's really off limits. So
that's great. We've been having a lot of 80s rock for the answers. I think that's the number one so far.
That's like the best workout music, man. It just got some good beats, you know, and like it just gets you going. Even like if you're early morning bird like I am.
Yeah.
So you need something to wake you up and just get you rolling. So
How about your favorite exercise for the gym?
Squats. Squats all day. Just squat, squat variations. Like, that's number one.
Do you have a specific variation that you like?
I don't back squat any of my people anymore, even myself. No, I don't really bar squat at all. Like, no bar. I got away from that. Last summer, I really went to more front squats or using the trap bar, you know, to load up and get heavier weight as well, kind of do a trap bar variation squat. But, you know, a lot of more front squatting, just getting two dumbbells, pretty simple, just load them up because, it just gets better core engagement. It's more engaging, you know, through the whole body, forces you to keep that pelvis in a good position. You don't dump out. That's by far my favorite thing. Like we do what we call the big four in High Performance West, and we do this year round. We do, you know, it's always kind of like a warm up or something we just always do. The big four is the, we only have like 10 minutes to do a, for whatever reason, a lift. You do the big four, and the big four for us is just bench, squat, front squat, push up, and then we call the trap bar, hex bar, Martha, and then a Martha squat. Or you can vary it with a landmine squat. But that's it. Like, that's the start of every single workout for our runners and for ourselves, because it's just the basic movements that recruit the most muscle tissue that get us the biggest hormonal response. And then we go from there. But a lot of people, a lot of distance runners, you'd be surprised. Like, when they first come in, it's like, they can't even do that. Like, can't even push up. So for some people, the big four, it's a big deal when they're able to do it all and then do the rest of the workout. But yeah, squats all day.
Awesome. I love it. We talk about those basic movements all the time on this show, so you're with good company. Jonathan, I really appreciate your time. Where can people find what you're doing?
I just do Twitter. So JMRPDX, at JMRPDX, I just do Twitter. You can email me, but I hate it, so I probably won't respond. I just said I'm going to choose one social media outlet, and that's it. I try to fly, intentionally under the radar. I'm not trying to create this branding or global platform as me of a coach. It's just more word of mouth. So, yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. High Performance West is more active. Actually, the athletes run the social media stuff. So we have Instagram, High Performance West, Twitter, High Perform West. I don't think we could have High Performance West as Twitter is too long. So it's like High Perform West and Twitter, or hopefully at a track meet. I mean, I think Steve and I, Google like Marcus and Magnus, Magnus and Marcus podcast. Like, I always got to remember I'm Steve's sidekick by choice. He's the bigger name for sure, and for good reason. But yeah, just Google Magnus and Marcus podcast on coaching and Google, and you find us there. But yeah, I'm more of a face-to-face type person for sure. So if you see me, come up and say hey at a meet, or if you just want to talk, like, direct message me on Twitter. I'm happy to, answer any questions however timely fashion I can. After track season is always like, I'm pressed for time. So if you ask of something of me during now until July, probably a delayed response, but the rest of the year, pretty good.
Awesome. Well, again, thanks for coming on the show. I really enjoyed speaking with you, and good luck this season.
Awesome. Appreciate it, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Thanks everyone for listening. Be sure to go to hammershed.com and sign up for our monthly giveaway. Each month we'll be giving away something to one of our listeners. Sign up once and you'll be entered to win all year round. Also, make sure to give us a review on iTunes. It's a great way to support the show. Until next time, train hard, train heavy, and remember, consistency is king.